Brace yourself, Toto. We're not in Kansas anymore. Poetic beeps and gentle persons, in-betweeners and non-conformers, genders all and genders equal. Welcome to Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast. This is episode 3, season 8. I am Damien B. Donnelly, your host and producer, and thank you so much for joining us today. Whether that's been on Spotify, Apple, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Player FM, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castbox, Podcast Addicts, or iTunes. As usual, we have four guests joining me today from England, Ireland, Portugal, and the United States, sharing the things that encourage them, that create in them, that hold them back, that push them forward. And one of those guests will join me at the end of today's show for Behind the Storms, the interview series examining the how, the why, and the what of poetry. The how we got into it, the why it captured us, and what have we done with it since. On today's episode, we examine disability, darkness, running, rage, gulls, gatting, cuts and coyotes, Dublin bar stools, Cork, Ukraine, MS and eating disorders. So, for the next 70 minutes, I suggest you put down the Hoover and put your feet up next to a comfy cushion, a bag of sweets and a glass of your favourite tipple. My name is Demi B. Donnelly, this is Eat the Storms, a poetry podcast, and I hope you enjoy the show. And for my first guest on Eat the Storms today, I'm delighted to welcome a returning stormer who will be again returning at the end of today's show to join me for the interview series Behind the Storms. Taking us to the San Francisco Bay Area of the United States, we have an award-winning writer who has a background in journalism, who hosts the quarterly Get Ekphrastic Folk Art blogzine on her website Folk Heart Press. Her work has appeared in various publications, both online and in print, not only writing, of course, because she is also a visual artist. And last year, she appeared in issue 3 of the Storms Journal with her photography. Her current projects include a series of videos based on original folk tales and legends and imagined prequels and sequels to fables and fairy tales. Her chapbooks include True North and Sightings from a Star Wheel from Origami Poems Project, Down River with Lee Poe, and most recently, Coyote and the Basket of My Ribs, published by Kelsey Books. From Los Angeles all the way to Eat the Storms, this is Karen Pierce Gonzalez.
It is such a privilege to be here today with you on this Eat the Storms podcast, which is itself a work of art. I'm going to read selections from Coyote in the Basket of My Ribs, which is a tribute to the mythical coyote messenger who travels seamlessly between life and death and once helped me navigate that wilderness. Coyote Dream 1. Fitful. In a den of sleep, taut coyote muscles twitch beneath my skin. Spine arches, I pull blankets back. Impatient paws push away my dream of domesticity. To chase a deer running down a hillside that slides into a sea, coyote cannot swim. Still, panting, she reaches the other shore. To sleep, I try again, count sheep, but stop when the wet, lone desert dog howls. Meadowed flocks are not to her liking. She prefers uneven edges of nightfall, Its darkness dissolves the calm of my certainty about which shadows are tame enough to clothe and feed, to give pen, paper, and paintbrush to. Not every pocket of inner wilderness is meant to stay wild, is it? I am jolted by the squeal of dawn's fast-moving tires turning the corner. Ears perked, I yell, run! And Coyote does, before daybreak can fold her back into the sheets of the bed I have made. A photo marked only kids. No mention of why we gathered that late summer afternoon in the yard, a yellowed patch of stubbed grass sticking up through dry clay. Us poised by a blue and white Fairlane parked on the road because our neighborhood didn't have driveways. That morning, my sister was placed in a pauper's plot, four rows up from a statue of lambs with Jesus, who was not her shepherd. She was the only one of this gaggle missing. Lanky girls in floral dresses, scuffed brown shoes, husky boys in pants too short or too long. But I see her in the corner of this black and white image, the shadowed wingspan of a bird flying off before the camera's lens could catch her. Coyote Dream 2. It has been weeks since Coyote slipped out of my fenced-in days that now begin with longing for her. A carnivore who cut her teeth on the raw edges of my heart, crimping the protective outer layer like it were pie crust. Absence. Your path now, well beyond light years, won't tell me why you perished so soon after your arrival. On the roof, I fine-tune the antenna to pick up your signal, but hear only the breaking of my heart. And I will close with this poem. Somewhere, it is morning. Somewhere, somewhere, somewhere. And a warm washcloth opens my eyes to a land that does not require passports to reach you. There, purple garlic flowers lean towards, yes, the sun furthest away from where I am without you. Summer clouds cover fields of hope, moments with you I may never love more than I do right now. Thank you.
From San Francisco in the United States to County Cork here in Ireland now for a new voice to the podcast, and I love welcoming new voices. A music graduate from University College Cork, whose debut EP arrived last October, my next guest is passionate about writing and exploring all of its forms. He has won prizes at the Listowel Writers' Week and was shortlisted for the Oliver Goldsmith Literary Festival. He released his debut novel in 2023, Once Upon a Human Sky, a young dystopian adventure about suppressed superpowers, but today his only superpowers are that of poetry. This is Shane Healy.
Thanks very much, Damien, for having me. Delighted to be on board. For me, the process of creating something is the best bit. When you're in the thick of it, shaping and chiseling away until something you're proud of comes out. And I find whatever is the most recent or current thing I'm working on to be my best work. It's only when I give it a bit of space to breathe and come back to it that I can make a better critical judgment. I wrote this first poem in the summer of 2023, and I've since given it space to breathe. But I like it still. It helped me process some of the terrible news that was happening. Fine line. A snap back echoed thud came from the sky like scud rain across the water. Cove was alive, celebrating. The snipped thunder advertised it to the harbour. My dogs writhed out from under wine sheets, cascaded down the stairs to bark at the window and flickering television clouds. They soon returned, uneasy, ears unsettled and up, sensing some sort of danger, but it was commemoration. And then I thought for a moment of being in a Ukrainian basement, how similar sounds fruit differently cerebral. The green apple of deep frequency turning rotten as it tumbles through the ear canal and settles festering in the brain's bucket of knowing. Children are shivering in the dark, wishing it to end, while we wish this Sunday would last forever. This next poem is called Gatting, after the Cork slang term, and was written several years ago, so it's had plenty of space. I write 90% of my poems on my iPad, especially at night while my new wife Noelle sleeps next to me. My iPad filing system is a bit chaotic though, and there are about 30 different folders with poems of varying quality in each, so I decided to put a little star next to the more standout ones. This was one with a little star. It's about college drinking culture with an element of melancholy. I like the rhythm in it. Gatting. Gaudy hooves, clack clack concrete, passes on fish supper corners, trite spirit singing cling jobs bring beer from the well. Dulled skull eyes, half lidded, whacked empty shot pots, hot shots, pot shots, what what's? We all sway rakes at the harvest, threshing ripe, ice-cubed courage and canned conversation over a simmering. Carpe diem, Machara, back down tomorrow, when the rage subsides and then seems silly. An will cadigum dolavalia? This next poem, I've half forgotten what it's about, so again, plenty of space. I think I might have watched the movie Mother with Jennifer Lawrence in it around the time of writing. It touches on an eating disorder. Sound of a tap. Each day drips by without my fingers knowing what they forget. The drain is wet and the lodged hair dissolving into some future. My eye turns the handle and waits for cold to stiffen the adrenaline dandelions singing a semi-breve window catching a gap of yellow sound hounding at the back of the hive. Something softening like a Labrador until wilted dry. There is a gurgling of sunlight across the sill and there is a taproot slithering in the pipe. Hunger is threatened because it feeds from the mind. I didn't have a title for this next poem, but I decided to call it Pain recently. My friend lost his mother the other day. He sits in his car at mornings to cry and shed things away. He remembers her in that car. He has learned to pray. I worry about my mother and think about that pain. For every little penny you pick up, you also have to pay. I don't want to try so hard all the time, but this is just something I felt I had to say. The final poem I'm going to read is about a good friend of mine who passed away last year. Fluid States. There is a girl who sits in a place called the Mercy, in front of a scarlet button that says, "Do not press." You'd swear that's what it's there for. Therefore, halls of trundling contradictions. I'm not certain what age she is, but she wills time to reverse, or move on, or go back to before the start. And they say, when you will it, it will be. They've taken her blood innumerable, perhaps to paint the button, and they call this the mercy, and they feed her it, through a drip too, and often sugar cubes, for the mercy. In the end, everything is an escape from something else.
My next guest, we are heading across the border to the United Kingdom for no stranger to Eat the Storms, as she has been a frequent guest on the podcast, where she's read from her debut pamphlet Quicksand, which was published by Dreek in 2020. She returned to read from her micro collection Stickleback Balancing Act, published by the Hedgehog Poetry Press in 2021. And today, I'm delighted to say she's back to read from her most recent pamphlet, also published by the Hedgehog Poetry Press in 2023. This is Step Into the Dark, and I was delighted to have an advanced reading of her pamphlet in order to write its blurb. Her poetry focuses on many themes, but often engages with the problems of disability centred around her own MS. I am delighted to welcome back to Eat the Storms, Julie Stevens.
Hello, Damien. Thank you for your wonderful podcast, Eat the Storms, and for giving me this opportunity to share my poems. I'm Julie Stevens. I was lucky to have a pamphlet published at the end of July by the Hedgehog Poetry Press. It's called Step Into the Dark. I'm a disabled poet, and my poems will often give you an insight into this. And Step Into the Dark does just that. This is Let the Dark Stay. I will sit with the dark and let it have me. Each breath is my offering to keep it here. My body is a table, so now it can feed. Take every dead bone and wrestle it dry. When the curtains close, let them stay shut. Dampen all colour. I don't need the glare. A hollow room may welcome this mind. I am here. And I am holding the dark. Both hands carry days, now tangled and torn, those simple tasks that wouldn't lie still, every cursed hour that dragged me under. They are here, hearing my rage. Don't try and find me to untie these ropes, blurring the bite will only feed this pain. Keep the door closed to secure my fight. I am here, and I am holding the dark. I suffer from insomnia. You never know what time you're going to wake. Your body kicks out, you shake. You just don't know. 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock, hello, and maybe 5 o'clock. This is insomnia. Night shakes hurt the most. Firm hands strangle the life out of sedate songs. You're awake, breathing the curse of noise as dark sniggers. The hours clang. Trees thump the ground. Damp air sharpens knives. Prickly reminders have lodged in bones. Ill words wrestle sore blood. A bead of mourning rolls under skin. You lie on this rack. Hear every rotten dream. Words swoop like snatching gulls. I often look back at who I was. Future tides. Memories flood in with waves, pounding reminders of how young and energetic I was, adventuring to dangerous seas. They're calling me now, to stand up and notice the change that swept in, thrown me onto a beach of stony reminders, rolling out the truth of where I am. I can hear them drifting in and out, announcing their loss. A girl who could once romp over uneven ground, unbalancing stones, and still stand firm, is now here, regarding her past self, left with a grief that feeds the question, what will future tides bring in? I used to be a runner, sprinter, 100 metres, 200 metres, no one wanted to race against me. Sometimes you still think you could run. Run again. For a minute you think you can run again. Feel the hand of a gust pushing you hard, fingernails digging in like there's no apology to give. But the north wind doesn't blow up my street. It lies slumbering in the sharp gravel of a road, watching the stillness of life hang like a breathless tongue. Death arrives early here, or so it seems. The passing of time is a stifled hurricane, stealing youth, leaving rusting scars all over a body that pleads to run. For a minute, you think you still can. A mind rooted in crossing the line will outrun every storm trampling its path. But it can never blast the hands of care. This street won't let you go. Thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the poems.
It's time to welcome another first-timer to Eat the Storms, based here in Dublin, although he's originally from Portugal and is the author of 12 books with a theme of travelling running throughout. Perhaps it's because he's lived in places like Spain, Ireland, Portugal and Hungary. In 2023, he released his latest poetry collection, an ekphrastic prose work based on the Irish artist Harry Kernoff, called Harry Kernoff's Guest, which was launched at the Irish Jewish Museum here in Dublin and later presented at the Sea Week Festival in Connemara and the Jewish Cultural Centre in Lisbon. With a sports column in the Echo newspaper, this is Vítor Vicente.
Hi there, my name is Vítor Vicente and I am a Portuguese author based in Dublin. I've published 12 books, all of them related to travel in one way or another. My latest work is a collection of prose poems called Harry Kernoff's Guest, inspired by the paintings of the Irish and Jewish painter Harry Kernoff. Let me read a few for you. I'm starting with St. Audience Arch, Cook Street. The day is yet to come when I may be allowed to pass below or above this arch. For now, that artistic curve simply brings back to me my early days in Dublin, when I was utterly anonymous and I could just let myself go from pub to pub with the tourist tattered excuse of being able to wander about the whole city on the pretext of drinking the next pint in a different spot. alcohol, like tourism and childhood, has always stood on the winner's podium of the best extenuating circumstances, whether drunk on a balcony with a cathedral view, or at some inconceivable bar counter where they don't serve Guinness, whether to bring that arch in my mind to your house and hang it on the wall as if it were a hunting trophy, or in the bedroom of the hotel over there in front, where I once woke at dawn and felt I was returning to Silesia, rising before a pile of trees as tall as St. Aldian's Arch. On the second poem, I'm bringing you to Davy Byrne's pub, Duke Street. I've never tried to understand people through people. I judge countries and their respective natives by their shops, what kind of businesses you see a lot of, and how they reveal the road through their shop windows. Apparently, Ireland lives some 20 years behind the continent, to which it belongs only on paper. Pubs predominate, and the outstanding ones are time-proof, with neither televisions nor other screens. And so they prevent that eventual short circuit in conversations between long-standing friends or new friendships which flower between one pint and another. Beer is called by its own name, served in a glass that it belongs to it as much as the barley does. A total experience, blind, with that secret ingredient of Irish innocence. It sells as much as the greenery. The journey goes on, and in the next poem, I'm taking you to St. Michael's Hill, Wine Tavern Street. Life goes on, steeply, clumsy, and untidily like a patchwork quilt with its own life. The sky was free even of clouds. It went out into the street, lit down to the city, with the exuberance that presides over the overdose of blue. But the streets, they turn out to be beaches. They ask for oil, which is only sold in a shop in Wine Tavern Street, and which has been shut since the owner disappeared. My unhappiness, it certainly lessened, even though we have no idea where the missing person ended up, whether he is only in hiding or piled up among the dead. Maybe some of his children will just take over the business or let it to someone interested in betting on retail. I don't really care. As long as the days become easier for me and I can go back to being a part of that sudden blue smile. We are leaving Dublin to Connemara for the fourth poem. Beech Trees, Renville. There is a certain sense of mourning at the end of summer. A light which, when it dims, instead of plunging us into the tomb, makes our flesh crawl with the cold. The so-called short days, the writer's letters, telling us that we are brief, making us recover the will to again be able to look at life as an immense flame, immune to the darkness in which hope disappears in an insidious dance. The shops, they keep the same opening hours and have the same workers. Only the parklands of Connemara stick to their own pace, persisting in that green that wavers between virginity and wildness. Let's get back to Dublin and finish this journey surrounded by Georgian houses. Trapped in this constellation of tenements, I travel, standing still or walking, never approaching the doors or trying to break them down. I allow myself to be carried along, wandering the city like someone wandering in a dream. A sleepwalker, incapable of everything, even of the uselessness of being dead, in the splendid anonymity of nothing having an identity. Between the chimneys, near the sky, I get lost, as if in a maze. Never before did I expect to find eternal rest on a Georgian roof.
Dearest listeners, it's now time to take that deep dive into poetry and creativity and all that lies behind the storms. Now, I am delighted to welcome back to the podcast today Karen Pierce-Gonzalez, who you've already heard, of course, earlier in this episode, reading from her latest chapbook, Coyote in the Basket of My Ribs, which was published by Kelsey Books. And Karen is joining us today to take part in Behind the Storms, our new interview series, which is looking at beginnings on how, on why, on the reasons that we all got interested in poetry in the first place and creation. So, Karen, thank you so much for joining me today, all the way from the Bay Area of San Francisco to here in Ireland. It's a lovely to have you with me.
It is such a delight to be here, my friend. I love the work you do and I love how you support others. Thank you.
Well, it's a pleasure. And unfortunately, our listeners are not going to be able to take in the view that I'm seeing. Not only do you have the best blow dry in town, but you also have some of the most incredible art, your own artwork on the walls behind you, because you're not just a poet, you're also a visual artist. And what I'm seeing is something that, you know, people who know you, I'm sure, have already seen. A little bit of a background, I suppose. So you're the author of 5 chapbooks, including True North, Sightings from the Star Wheel, and of course, most recently, Coyote in the Basket of My Ribs. But as I said, you're also a visual artist. Currently, you're adorning the front cover of the Chestnut Review, Volume 5, Issue 3. It looks amazing. And of course, you were a fantastic stormer last year with 2 of your photographs decorating Issue 3 of the Storms or Printed Journal. So,
hey!
Yay, indeed. So with that all in mind and gathering it all together, let's try and journey back a little bit to the beginning before we talk about the collection itself. How in all of that did it all get started from, I suppose, not just the poetry, but the creation, the artwork, and even the interest, I suppose, in folklore? You know, your handle is Folk Hearts Press. So tell us how this all comes about and the juggling of it all.
Start with this. I grew up in a community of immigrants. My mother's family were Spanish Jews from the island of Rhodes, and they married. And so in those marriages, there were people from Egypt and Libya and France and Israel and all over the world. So I grew up in a subculture with different holidays, right? I learned Hebrew and with people with different accents from different parts of the world. So it's very comfortable for me. Even your little sweet Irish accent is very, it's very wonderful to hear. So I was no stranger to the other than, to the small group with the broken words and their traditions and whatnot. But they were separate from mainstream. So there's always been two rivers. There's been mainstream and there's been the non-mainstream. Okay, ever since I can remember, I have written. Now, my first poetry book was Cat in the Hat, Dr. Seuss.
Wow!
And I'll never forget the brilliant wordplay. And that's what I, and the lyrical quality of that wordplay. Now, as I grew up, I would read books and then rewrite them.
To put it into your phrasing, or
to put it into my phrasing, and I would notice techniques and mechanics in the books. They were kids' books, so they weren't like voluminous novels. But back up in the backdrop, there was a tremendous amount of abuse and dysfunction. So I learned early to stay inside. It was just the best place for me to be. It's where the stars could reach me most quickly. Because I would talk to them and they would, call a response back, and I would stay there, right? So I would rewrite, and then obviously through school, I was encouraged in school settings to, I was writing scripts in the fourth grade for Friday afternoon theater. I mean, it just was, I didn't have guidance, so I didn't know what not to do. I didn't know what I couldn't do, right? I only just knew to do.
But suddenly, I think the worst thing about learning sometimes is to have a rule book and be given the rules and be told, like, these are your parameters and you need to stay within them. When you don't have that,
it's
anything and everything.
Right. And because I didn't show many things to many people, I was not on public display. Right. So I was safe. I mean, I kept safe. So anyway, life goes on, and there were tragedies like what happened in the coyote in the basket of my ribs. I had deep pockets inside, like a honeycomb, where things could be stored and kept safe.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, simultaneously, I have to survive in the 3D world, get good grades, whatever, function, keep myself safe, become fiscally responsible, do all these things, while inside was an interior, just a sea of constellation stories.
What's extraordinary in what you're saying there is so many artists, so many definitely writers who I've spoken to, and even myself, we create these pockets that are extraordinary on the inside as a diversion from all that's not extraordinary and all that's too difficult on the outside. But yet, within that almost dark space, lights are created. Star, like you said yourself, stars, easier to touch the stars.
Yes, well, I mean, I kept breathing. I was kept moving. So almost like a warrior stance, I would just get bumped and battered and keep moving. Thank God for that. And I didn't know what I was doing because I was just doing what I needed to do. So then I get to college and I'm taking creative writing classes, and I noticed I am a horrible groupie. You do not want me to be your fan. Because if it's not natural, it's really a bad experience for both of us. Mm-hmm. So I remember reading poetry, but we loved the classics. They were all people like Lord Byron who were so well connected and socially positioned that who knows if their work would have had merit without that. And I remember thinking, oh, this is not right. So I went away from studying the poets and the writers. And I found myself, thank you, E.E. Cummings, getting into linguistics, the nature of language. And so I learned Homeric Greek. I learned Latin. I already had my Hebrew. I already knew my Spanish. Not too much else really, but California Indian languages. Because of the anthropological component, I live in California, where we have probably 43 nations in this state. My professor, anthrop professor, whom I was her assistant, wrote the grammar for the Shasta Indian language. So point being, for example, they may not have our Indo-European male-female. They may have short-long. They may have a base 5 number system, not a base 10 number system. So worlds opened up, worlds of possibility, inspired fundamentally by E.E. Cummings and the way he fractured language. And not that I liked all of his poems, but the ones that I was drawn to, I used to read them to my daughter when she was taking a bath. In just spring, when the world is mud luscious, the little lame balloon man whistles far and wee, and Eddie and Bill
come running from piracies. I mean, it's just, she still remembers those poems, right? They still, poor kid, but anyway. So then I got into linguistics, and that took me right into my anthropological leaning into folklore. Mm-hmm. And once again, folklore is the street face of mythology. It's for the common man, it's for the proletariat, the plebeian. It's how they view the world and pass on their wisdom. It's not necessarily cosmology, right? So I would look at the way different cultures would do their foods and what it meant. And just so, and once again, I'm in the Bay Area, which is about as diverse, thank God, left coast. I'll never leave the left coast of this country, ever. Mm-hmm. So then I got my degrees, both of them special majors in the things that interested me. And then I went on to become a journalist, which I swore I'd never do because I felt like a sellout. And besides that, I don't care about the news. I'm not into politics. However, I created my own beat. So I worked for the San Francisco Chronicle, which is the 12th largest paper in the United States. And I also worked for the Marin Independent Journal. And my beat, anthropological, cultural, spiritual communities. I had tea with Thich Nhat Hanh. I met with the Dalai Lama twice. And my job was to translate what they had to say into non-fear-based seventh grade Mr. and Mrs. Middle America language. So I was just pioneered. I mean, it's not that I knew what I was doing, and I just was doing. But anyway, so it introduced me to many different worldviews again, how they express themselves. So bottom line, poets all over the world, this is a very rich place to live in. This is a very rich world we live in. And we're gifted with opportunities and experiences that thread. I mean, like I said earlier, I don't take credit for the weave. I take credit for the work.
But the work is, like you said, I didn't want to get into journalism, but you didn't get into journalism because you didn't specifically study to be a journalist, because you went in and brought the you with you. And as you said, you made the beat,
Exactly.
Wasn't journalism. It was learning how to understand, to see what was going on around you and translate that to others.
It was amazing because I was being sought. I was being reached out for. And then along the way, I'm still writing magazine articles and short stories. So still keeping the genres.
Yeah.
So I didn't really come back to poetry until after my years of having a public relations company boutique in which I represented cultural communities.
I can imagine during all this, because while you're writing, while you're listening, there are so many visuals that you must just be impacted with continuously. Like, I was wondering about, when sort of the visual arts came into it, but clearly there's already a nesting period happening because you're speaking in so many different nationalities, cultures, languages.
Exactly. And then keep in mind, I meditate. So when I meditate, it's more shamanic, and no, I don't use substance. No. I just use discipline. Shamanic, I enter into the ocean and am with the leatherback turtle. I am on the tundra with the caribou. I am there in the weave of a tapestry whose strings are dangling. I am right there in the room where it happens. And I don't always immediately act on it because I integrate it. Sometimes I'll spend, I spent probably 2 weeks with the leatherback turtle in meditation, understanding how it moves. It doesn't have a hard shell. And it never stops moving. Never stops moving. And I thought, that's why we are connected, because I never stop moving. Mm-hmm. Okay, so these are personal lessons, but they're also artistic lessons too.
Then you come along to Coyote in the Basket of My Ribs, and also and with art too. There's certainly then a connection. Clearly there comes a point where you are thinking, no, now I want to share something. Now it's no longer just about understanding. Yeah. learning, soaking up. Now there is something that's coming out, maybe from that pocket of where I've stored everything earlier on. Suddenly I'm coming out of it. I was reading in the blurb, you know, our dear friend Marcel Newbold, poet, former managing editor of Nightingale and Sparrow. She said in the blurb, this is an exquisite exploration of restlessness. She said, your dream poems are intertwined with a delicate, involving understanding of loss, of dependency on the just out of reach. And it's a collection that comprises of just 26 poems, I think, but it borders on epic. You know, there are terrifying images at times, the image of the carnivore who cuts its teeth on the raw edges of your heart, intertwined with images of the wild, reckless coyote against this child, this adolescent, this adult, for having perhaps her own tug of war with the frustration of the fact that spring doesn't come with its own rebirth. There are impeccable losses that won't be cured. Tell us about this wet, lone desert dog.
So, you know, coyote is miraculous because coyote is a messenger between life and death. It is one of the few mythic animals that can travel back and forth seamlessly.
Yeah.
And coyote originally appeared years ago, and I wrote a couple poems, and I kept writing them, two or three burdened, and then just stopped, right? But I, as I grew older, as I aged so eloquently, I didn't get a discount at the grocery store. I'm a senior now. But coyote is, you know, like in the poem where coyote cuts the edges of my heart like they were pie crust.
Mm-hmm.
It is only because coyote is young and restless that coyote does so, doesn't do so to hurt. Mm-hmm. And I mean, so there's an understanding of the element, the supranatural, not supernatural, supranatural element of this particular animal spirit. And so I would follow it around. No, not really clear where it was going, but I knew it was an opus.
Yeah.
Okay, I knew it was important work. And let me tell you real quickly in the backlog, the backstory. I don't put it in the book because all of my chapbooks are tributes to some source other than myself. So it's not about what happened to me. So coyote comes from when I was a child, my mother and my sister went to the store for me and my sister never came back. And things just got further and deeper and more painfully falling apart-ish at that time. So coyote was a soothe balm because coyote travels back and forth and never dissolves. Mm-hmm. Coyote is always there. So when I was able to, I think the anniversary of my sister's death, which by the way, interestingly, I finished the collection the day of her birthday. I thought that was really interesting. Yeah. And it got accepted for publication on her birthday, right? So, and then the month that she died in, which was February, is when it met the world. So I just trusted the journey, really not knowing, because it's dreamscape. There's a safety in dreamscape. No one can say it is this or it is that or it's not. I mean, there is a safety mechanism in working on that sort of landscape, that kind of terrain, that dreamy terrain. So coyote would, I loved coyote, just like I loved my sister. And so I would follow coyote and sometimes she would mislead me. Sometimes she would take me. Sometimes she would guard me. Sometimes she would play with me. But I always had her.
Mm-hmm.
And she became a substitute in a way for my sister. So I never, even though I lost her, I didn't really lose her.
Mm-hmm.
And through coyote, I was able to always travel back and forth to her presence in my life and its power and its beauty, right? And its undeniably magical existence in my life.
And I think I was talking with Susan Richardson last week, and she was also talking about her collection and talking about the loss of her mother. And I think certain things come along, whether it's a collection, whether it's a painting, at a time when it's supposed to come along. You know, it's not the minute the loss has happened. It's not a day later, a year later, a year later. Sometimes it's 10, sometimes it's 20 years later. It's, you know, I think we're in that numbed, almost protective mode for such a long time that it becomes difficult to translate anything or to hear what we're actually saying. That, and perhaps it comes at the time that we need it most, later.
Yes. Yeah, and I think you're right about that. And I know for myself, again, because I was through trial and error, so many genres, I was confident I could weave it together.
Yeah.
I just didn't know what the weave would be.
It is an extraordinary opus. You were talking about earlier in terms of the interconnectedness of things. I'm always intrigued. Joni Mitchell is a huge, you know, Joni Mitchell was the, you know, the one person, I think the reason I started writing is because of Joni Mitchell. She said in a comment during one interview, I don't know what comes first, the writing or the painting. And I find it funny that very few people know of her painting. You know, like she painted most of her album covers. She's had huge exhibitions all around the world. But she said she didn't know which came first, that there was all, you know, after she'd finished maybe writing an album, then she'd go and she'd into her studio, she'd paint for a month, a year, and then she'd write again and then the painting. But she never know what started it off, you know, whether it was the painting started as the poetry or the poetry that started the writing. I know that she wanted to be a dancer originally, but then she got polio when she was a young kid, and that, you know, crushed all those dreams. So I suppose the expression came in a different way. But I was wondering for you, is there always an interconnectedness between writing and visual, or is there a separation?
Yeah. What I want to say first of all is she is probably one of the lyricists I admire most in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Hers is poetry, bar none. So back to the question. Sometimes the work floats in different rivers.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a big boat in one and a small raft in the other, but they are moving together. Although I can't always see them together. The Ajna River, you know, is a mythic place where Ganesh comes out and Kuan Yin and masculine and feminine move past their obstacles to unite and to be open to all that is. It's not a gender thing. It's an energetic thing. And the work is in the Ajna River, and I never know where the bends are going to be. Sometimes the canoe topples over, right, and I end up on the shore with a piece because that's its life, and I trust that.
Mm-hmm.
I do create simultaneously work where there's visual and verbal written work, but it's never intentional. I don't have to have an agenda like I did as a journalist or whatever. So I am free to just go with whatever. Sometimes it can only be expressed in color or in language. Some things come in sound, you hear the waves, and I know this is, I experience this with your work. The waves come in at different frequencies, different colors, different vibrations. So to surf them and let them expand themselves and evolve is really something. And sometimes it means a physical art piece, and sometimes it doesn't. But most of my physical art piece based on elements in the natural world, tree bark and things like that, that are already alive too. We just find a common ground where we meet. But sometimes they're separate because they're different realities. Language is very different from color, from shape, right? And my hope is to one day be mistress of both.
I think that's a title you can claim pretty much right now. It's not just for you to trust the process. It's to trust the moment. It's to trust the movement. You know, you trust in the flow, and you don't seem to be distracted or knocked by where it's supposed to take you. You're willing to go on the journey. And I think for writers, for any kind of creator, I think that's a huge learning curve that we cannot necessarily see the end of the beginning. It will go where it's meant to go, or it will end, like you said, and you upturning and you're left on the shore.
And then think about it, my friend. If you put it on paper or you read it out loud, those fibers emit back out into the world. And they do their work as sound, as only sound can do. And you, of course, the master of sound, I love listening to you read. You understand that there's a quality, there's an energetic vibration to the sounds that just move the world along. Yeah. We live in an amazing place, this earth, you know?
We do. And, you know, I think a huge majority of us appreciate it. But I think there are few that continue its creation and take it from the land and take it into the palm of their hand and nurture that.
Yeah.
You do that. And thank you so much for doing it.
Well, it's really a blessing to do it. It feeds me. Can I read you one poem?
Yes.
I read you a new poem. So, Damien, this poem is part of a series. And that's another thing. I work in series with art and with writing. So I'm not attached to it being a certain something. So when the energy arises for that content, I have a series ongoing. So there's always room. So this is a series based on the Olmec deities. And I want to read it because I just finished it. Oh, and I'm excited. And so this is an Olmec, for people who don't know, is a pre-Mesoamerican culture. So think Indo-European is the equivalent on this continent in the United States. Feathered Olmec serpent, Quetzalcoatl. One. You coil up the roots of my too deep sleep. Slowed. I am most willing to roll under the mirrored shield of your blue belly, branching towards red and gold throat plumage. As you shed cooled lava of royal obsidian on my pillow, the translucent casing coats me, wets down the woven silk threads that keep my head above waters ageless and cold. You spiral my spine, head to toe, you know exactly where you are going. I gurgle, slip into the underwater bed, seagrass patterns crisscross, tectonic plates push me to float on my back. Two. Your snake tongue licks mine, each exhale of satiny breath, a fitted sheet of warm air that stretches over ribbed ocean ridges, undulating fathoms below. Double fanged in the dark, you turn on me, drain primal fears of dying. Siphoned, my veined liquid squirts right into your mouth. You swallow my mineral rich humanity. Spit out wanted prayers wasted for the dead. Still living, you hiss. Arms raised, I hold on to the spread of your ancient neck, glide skyward. Three. The arc of my night changes. I slither up your sacred scales, become a body reborn to soar. On a cumulus cloud, I watch you circle back to pluck field rats nesting in my fallen hair. Core-boned jaws open wide, you eat them whole, regretting only that you cannot gorge more.
A line probably I'm going to take from that and apply it to you is, I am most willing.
Yes. Oh, wow. Thank you.
to see, to take it, to hold it, to share it.
Thank you. Thank you, my friends. And thank you kindly to your listeners who I hope love you as much as I do.
Thank you so much.
You are welcome, my friend.
Now, to finish up today, I'm going to leave you with a poem which last year was featured in The Stunning Ona Tull, Volume 2, an Irish Journal of Poetry, Prose and Visual Arts. And I'm reading this today because it's a poem inspired by art. And of course, Karen is an all-round artist. And we also had joining us Vitter today, who was inspired, of course, by the artist Harry Kernoff. This poem itself was inspired by Jack B. Yeats and his painting Until We Meet Again. This is called We Were Never Summer. Come in, come out, let go. The waves are rough on detail, on why you stay and I cannot be held. I leave and you do not ask why. We cannot grieve over a question that has no answer. Carve a boat from wood you've cut in your own field, and its destiny is to make its way to the sea. The waves are rough on rejection. Come in, come out, grow old. The journey will not wait to be captured on a canvas or recalled in detail on a page. This race is rough on the writer, poet, painter. Pause and lose the moment. Be unprepared and lose the light. The journey is rough, like the salt in this water that wasn't meant to sustain, but to train us to explore the thirst. Come in, come out, come home. The loss is translucent. The hat is heavier than before, and the shadow a slippery beast. I call, and only an echo comes back, a myth I made of who we were. There are many shells on this shore that do not taste of a single sea. There is light in the shade of this land I never saw before. I turn. But now it is you who has left. Summers are hard here on this island made for winter. But when it rains, I see you in its fall and open my mouth, having learned how to taste. Poetry peeps and gentle persons, in-betweeners and non-conformers, genders all and genders equal. We've reached the end of season 8, episode 3 of Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast. My name is Damien B. Donnelly. I've been your host and producer, and thank you so much for tuning in yesterday, today, tomorrow, or this evening, whether that has been on Spotify, Apple, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Player FM, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castbox, Podcast Addicts, or iTunes. My guests on today's show have been Karen Pierce-Gonzalez, Victor Vicente, Julie Stevens and Shane Healy. For details on all of my guests, you can head on over to our website, www.eatthestorms.com. Click on the podcast section called Listen to the Podcast, and there you will find a blog post for every episode. And this, of course, was episode 3, season 8. And in that blog post, you will find photos, bios and social media handles, so you can find, follow and favour all our delightful guests on today's show. Now, while you're there, please feel free to sing about, to shout about and to post about this podcast. We're an international community, and here at Eat the Storms, we realise that the spotlight can only truly give off warmth and light when it's shared with others. So please do us all a favour and share the hell out of this bloody poetic storm. The music on today's show has been from purpleplanet.com, and the podcast itself is produced on Spotify for Podcasters, formerly known as Anchor. Until next time, you're driving into town with a dark cloud above you and you need a poetic distraction and dial us in, please pay attention to the road. Look out for coyotes crossing. Remember, the lines are always open. And of course, as always, stay bloody poetic.
Oh, thank you.